You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
Hey, we're Cloud Control, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Happy Monday, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host, Sophie Schlesinger, is off dancing in Maine for 2 weeks, so I'm going to be doing the show solo. But today, I am continuing our State of Cheese series with a little look at cheese making in West Virginia. So I'm pleased to have on the show today for our first segment, we're going to be talking with Penny Sagawa from Spring Gap Mountain Creamery. And the second segment of our show will feature Terry Clapp from TLC Farm Goat Dairy. If you have questions about this or any other show, email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com and we will do our best to answer your cheesy queries. So I think, Penny, are you with us?
This is Penny.
Oh, hi. Sorry, I think we had a little volume thing.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a communication glitch there.
We're not even using cell phones. That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you are located, I see, in Paw Paw, West Virginia.
That's correct.
I love Paw Paws.
You know, there aren't any Paw Paws that I've found so far in Paw Paw.
That is so strange. I wonder how the town got its name.
I assume that there used to be Paw Paw trees down by the river.
Aha.
But there is a Paw Paw tunnel, which is part of this DNO canal bike trail.
Oh, I see.
So it may be that the town was named after the tunnel. I'm not sure.
Very, very interesting. Well, regardless, the pawpaw made my heart warm when I when I saw the name. So can you tell our listeners, how long have you been making cheese in West Virginia, and what kind of cheeses do you make?
Well, we've been making cheese here a year in April, so I guess it's been 15 months.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you very much. At this point, we make 4 different raw cow's milk cheeses.
Okay.
One of them is called West Virginia Blue, because, of course, it's West Virginia. another one that we make is a Dutch-style Gouda, which is called Jersey Gold, because we use 100% Jersey cow milk. Then we make a third, which is a cheddar. And we named it after our dog, Sophie. So it's called Sophie's Select.
Very nice.
And then the fourth cheese that we make is called Shenandoah Sunrise, and it's a washed rind cheese.
Well, that sounds like a really fantastic array of cheeses. What made you decide to do raw milk cheeses versus other styles? I'm assuming, raw milk cheeses, obviously you don't have to buy pasteurizer, so that's an important...
Right, that was, well, you know, we were coming from absolutely no experience cheesemaking, and we initially thought that, you know, we would just make mozzarella and ricotta and, you know, brie and all those fun cheeses that everyone loves. And then we looked into buying a small pasteurizer, and it was prohibitively expensive.
It is. It's
so,
such a giant
thing. So then
thing.
We switched over to raw milk cheeses, you know, thinking that it would be cheaper just to age them for the required 60 days and sell them that way. But then that, you know, sort of brought up a whole another issue with inventory and storage space and aging and taking care of them. So, you know, in the end, we love doing it, but I'm not sure that, you know, if we had known all the factors, we might have bitten the bullet and bought a pasteurizer.
And bought a pasteurizer.
Yeah.
Well, can you tell our listeners, I saw on your website that you were just mentioning what an undertaking it is to construct a creamery. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how you guys learned how you were going to build your cheese plant and maybe some, I don't know, some advice and some do nots for anyone thinking about getting into cheese making?
Sure. Well, I think one of our biggest pluses here in West Virginia is that there really isn't that much cheese making in West Virginia, so the health inspector and the Department of Agriculture guys and all the people that are sort of there to help you get your business up and running were really enthusiastic and really helpful as far as answering all our all our stupid questions and trying to get answers to all these regulatory issues.
That's really great to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we had started, say in Virginia or Maryland or somewhere where there's a much bigger sort of base of cheesemakers, we might have been lost in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But this way, we really got sort of hands-on one-on-one attention, which was really nice. But we built a 40 by 40 cheese house on our property, and it's just like, 50 yards from the house.
Mm-hmm.
So, our commute is like 2 minutes.
That's always
and,
a plus.
We took a 3-day cheese making course in Vermont.
Oh, but where did you guys go?
At Three Shepherds with Larry and Linda Falaise.
Oh, okay. Yep. Absolutely.
And so they have a small facility. And so we started out thinking that we were going to build a facility similar to theirs because they also, it's the two of them and they sort of make cheese together and it was a very sort of intimate space. But with the regulatory requirements in West Virginia, I think Vermont is a little bit more easygoing.
Yeah, their regulatory sister, their inspectors seem to be very, and their Department of Agriculture seems to be very friendly towards their cheesemaking industry.
Right, and I think that they get the difference between a large, sort of dairy operation kind of thing and a small cheesemaking facility, whereas here we kind of had to follow the federal regulations and the state regulations that applied to these large facilities. So we kind of ended up doing a building that was a little bit more conventional.
Okay. And in terms of conventional, what does that mean in terms of equipment or layout and stuff like that?
Sorry, I was having trouble hearing you.
Oh, no, that's fine. I said just in terms of like layout and equipment, what does that mean in terms of, being more conventional, more like what a large dairy would do?
Well, so we just have a 40 by 40 metal building with three rooms that have evaporators so we can have three different humidity and temperature controlled aging areas.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, we were kind of thinking more farmhousey and maybe dynamiting a cave into the hill, sort of your dream cheese house.
Yeah.
And, we wanted to use wood to age the cheeses on and all this. We had sort of a grand plan, but pretty much all of that got shot down because, you can't use wood. You have to have plastic matting. There are all these issues that, while it would have looked much nicer, we would never have passed an inspection.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be a sort of learning curve, as the cheese industry in this country matures. I'm hopeful that some of that stuff will start to change, but I think it'll take a while.
Obviously, in Europe, you see these small cheese farmstead cheesemakers, and they sort of, do everything as they've done it for hundreds of years, and it seems to work for them.
So, yeah, exactly.
Not everything has to be stainless steel and concrete and all
and
that.
Plastic stuff, and...
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
but we do have mostly stainless steel and concrete and plastic, so...
Well, little by little, right?
Right.
Where do you guys predominantly sell your cheeses? Do you rely on farmers markets or do you sell to shops in your area? What's the market for your cheese?
Well, currently we're only selling at farmers markets. We do 5 markets a week in the DC area.
Wow, that's a lot.
Well, we try and either split up and go to 2 markets on one day, or do 2 markets one after the other, because it's a 2-hour drive from here to the DC area, and you know, with gas prices the way they are, kind of have to sort of finagle some way to get out there and sell to our customers, but still, you know, remain economically viable. So,
absolutely, absolutely. And what have you found in the DC market? I'm sure that there are people. I mean, I bet the DC market loves your aged raw milk cheeses.
They do. You know, the whole raw milk thing is, I guess, really starting to catch on, because people see the raw milk sign and they're just so excited. Although a lot of people want to know if we can provide them with raw milk.
Of course,
which obviously we can't. But, you know, it really helps to get the conversation started, and, you know, people try the cheese, and we try and sort of tell them that it's the way that cheese used to be made and is generally made in Europe. So, you know, you have to educate people as far as it tastes different, the texture's different, you know, it's not your everyday supermarket cheese. So
thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
So 1 year in, or 15 months in, where do you see your farm, you know, progressing to? Do you guys have plans to make other different varieties of cheese, or are you going to, I don't know. What's next?
Well, first of all, we'd like to sort of get our cheeses into more local shops, you know, cheese shops and, you know, wine stores, and, you know, the holy grail would probably be Whole Foods and that kind of thing, because with just the two of us, it's really hard to make a living just through farmers markets.
Absolutely. Distribution is key. When you can find those good partners, that seems
right.
to really make a big difference. Well, and so if people want to learn more about your farm, do you guys have a website people can visit?
Yes, it's springgapmtn.com, and it's a very rudimentary website. But we also have a Facebook fan page that a friend of ours runs, so it's actually much more informative than our website.
I know, the Facebook thing is for real, and it is a full-time job in and of itself.
It is, and
it's,
you know,
great.
Our friend Kevin, he loves to do that kind of stuff, you know, post stuff and take photos and do all that, so we just sort of let him run with it, and we're so happy that someone else is willing to do it for us.
I know, that is, you guys hit the jackpot.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're almost out of time on the show, but thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
And thanks so much for inviting me.
If I'm down in the DC area, I'm definitely going to check out my local farmers markets to Spring Gap cheese.
Okay.
West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads take me home to the place I belong. West Virginia, mountain mama, take me home. All my memories gather round her, miner's lady, stranger to blue water. Dark and dusty, painted on the sky, misty taste of moonshine.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Greenhorn Radio, hosted by Severin von Scharner Fleming, every Thursday at 2 p.m. Greenhorn Radio is radio for young farmers by young farmers. Helmed by acclaimed activist, farmer, and documentarian Severin Fleming, Greenhorn Radio is a weekly phone interview session surveying America's cutting-edge under-40 farmers. Again, that's every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
And we are back on Cutting the Curd, though almost reluctantly so. That song is so good. I'm a huge John Denver fan. Can you hear the music from your end, or is that only on my end?
Yes, I can. Yes, and I was really, really impressed there. That just put me right in the mood here.
Excellent. Well, so for the second segment of our show, we're talking with Terry Clapp. Terry is from TLC Farm Goat Dairy in Leroy, West Virginia. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Well, so tell us a little bit about how you got started making cheese in West Virginia. Are you a native West Virginian?
Well, no. A lot of people wonder about my accent. I'm originally from Syracuse, New York, and then like all new good New Yorkers, we all moved to Florida once in a while. so I ended up in Orlando in the 50s, and then my wife and I moved to Port Charlotte, Florida, about and 15 years ago, we moved from the Port Charlotte, Florida area up to Ripley, West Virginia area. Our address is in Leroy, but we're right outside of Ripley, believe it or not, West Virginia. And we started, a lot of our friends down in Florida, you know, were talking about healthier foods, and I contracted renal cell carcinoma, which is a kidney cancer, back in 1994. And from that, we started looking at healthier ways to, you know, we wanted to gain more knowledge of healthier ways to eat and better nutrition and with the food that we had. And so we wanted to start a healthier alternative, and so we turned to goat milk products, and we thought that would be a great answer, and it surely has become a very good answer to that. And so we moved up, we tried to start a dairy in down in the southwest Florida area, but the expense was so astronomical that we looked towards Linda's family, which lives up in Canton, Ohio, and because we didn't know where to turn with this cancer, so we wanted to move closer back to her family. So an opening was up here at Charleston Area Medical Center in Charleston, West Virginia, and I managed to pathology department there, so we were able to come up here, and Linda went from the an accountant with the hospital to starting a goat dairy, grade A goat dairy. So
there you
so
go.
That's how we got started.
That's very interesting. I always wondered, I think that there are still, and I might be wrong, but I think that there are still no farmstead cheese operations in Florida. And I was wondering if it was a climate issue or was it, but you, the expense of the land, that totally makes sense.
Right, that and also your veterinary bills will be quite high because of the sandy soils in the southern part of the state, and that's why you see a lot of horse ranches in Ocala and the north central area of Florida, because the soil changes its consistency into more of a clay and dirt type thing other than sand. And so we started looking around up here and in this area, and found a lovely farm, an 1897 farm that was we're only the third owners of, and that was quite interesting. And it was partially restored, and we finished the restoration of it.
Now,
and,
can I ask you, what was the farm before you guys bought it? Was it always a dairy farm, or was it?
No, it was actually a cattle farm with beef cattle, and so we turned it around to goat dairy, and sort of quite a change there of venue, but it was quite interesting. Dr. Ludwig and his two brothers here in this area had bought over 3,000 acres and had divided it up amongst themselves, and we bought one of the farms from the brothers, and it was quite reduced in size, but we got the home, and there's a lot of acreage around it, and you know, some of the farms, some of the you know, barns on the farm there. And so the USDA come out there and looked at our facility, our largest barn, and said, well, you know, it's got commercial rafters and a lot of commercial construction to it, so it would make a good dairy facility. So we turned a horse and cow barn into a grade A USDA, grade A FDA approved facility.
That is absolutely fantastic, and what an undertaking. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like to make that transformation?
Yes. A lot of the purchasing of of equipment for a goat dairy, as you would imagine, is on a very much smaller scale. Mm-hmm. And we had to do a lot of researching to find equipment small enough. You know, instead of like 1,000-gallon bulk tanks, we needed a 30-gallon, you know, and for a small farmstead operation. And a pasteurizer, we have a 25-gallon pasteurizer and Qualtech pasteurizer from Glengarry Cheesemaking up in Canada. And had to do a lot of research to find that, and then a lot of the regulations, the state inspectors said, well, you know, you all are the first grade A goat dairy that we've ever had in West Virginia history.
Wow.
And so we've had some grade B cheese processing plants, but nothing under grade A specifications, so we need your help. So we gathered a lot of information, and we're ready to start about 6 years ago. And we had one thing happen to us. They went from the airspace in the pasteurizer had to have culinary moisture-free steam instead of electric heat. So, and it was one of the last things that we had to do. And, you know, there's always a glitch somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And so we checked with Thermosteam Steam out in Naperville, Illinois, and they do a ThermoClean is what it's called. Andrew Heller has the company there, and he developed in 3 months. He developed a culinary steam generator just our size, a little stainless steel boiler that we can pull around and go right into the clover clamp on the in one of the holes in the pasteurizer, and it puts out 97% moisture-free culinary steam.
Wow!
And
so
steams the surface there, and it's quite a unique thing. And we were really thankful we could find someone that was that interested and took it on themselves to do all the engineering and just charge us for the equipment itself.
No, I mean that is like really remarkable. So you said the name, it was called ThermoClean.
Yeah, ThermoClean and Naperville, Illinois. ThermoClean.
My godfather lives in Naperville, Illinois. That is too funny.
Yeah.
I'm from Illinois, and yeah, I've been to that town many times.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really something. Andrew Heller is his name, and his father had a copper smith shop in Naperville and developed copper boilers. And they went and he just sort of carried on his father and grandfather's business and started making stainless steel boilers for commercial bakeries and to steam their breads and different items, and ended up, he was the man to talk to, I'll tell you.
Well, it is handy to have people around who know about building stuff and engineering, that is for sure.
I tell you what, we were, and of course it was just all new to us, but our neighbors and everyone talked about how wonderful my wife's cheeses were, and you ought to go commercial and sell that to the public, you know. So I can't quite tell you exactly how much that was, but it was quite a bit of money. Later, we are settled down to being able to sell to the public, and we're FDA, USDA certified, and we can still sell to all 50 states and its provinces.
That is so cool. And so how big is your herd of goats?
Our herd, we're right at 20 goats right now. But so you can imagine, it's still a pretty small operation. And we sell out all our products at the Jackson County Farmers Market in Ripley, West Virginia.
That's fantastic. And how far is that from your farm?
That's about 12 miles.
That is the best. I mean, to produce it all and sell it all locally, that's like the dream. Everybody wants to do that.
Oh, I tell you, we birth the goats. We have a birthing center and nursery, and we actually will birth the goats. My wife is right there, and myself when I can. We're right there when we see it's time for them to birth, and we bring them over to the birthing center, and we have a nursery right next to that where we bottle feed all the babies when they come, and we take the moms and give them some kale syrup and warm water and get them back on their feet and take them over to milk the colostrum, you know, at the dairy right mm-hmm. across the road there. And it's all we have a half mile drive there that's up, and it we're just right across the street from our dairy, our home is, and so it's a very convenient way, and it's very quiet, very isolated, so it makes a nice atmosphere for us.
Absolutely.
And the girls are all, they love being in the hills of West Virginia. They love, we have a lot of rocky hillsides and a lot of hilly terrain that they love, and a lot of brush in our different paddocks. So we change our paddocks, of course, every once in a while to let them get into the forest area and back into the the regular pasture areas. And we have our own organic hay field, and we're kosher and organic and vegetarian. So it really
wow. you've got,
works
you've
out
got
good
it all.
For a lot of the vegetarian diets.
Yeah, absolutely. Now let me ask. I think how many cheesemakers are there in West Virginia? Do you?
I don't know of any right now that are commercial like we are, but because we had a family down in Nicholas County, West Virginia, near the Greenbrier Resort. And they were making cheeses several years ago, and I think they closed their facility. I believe they have done that, and but I haven't heard back from them in a few years. But we've, from what I understand from our state and federal inspectors, that we are the only one that they inspect for goat products.
Okay.
Here in West Virginia.
Yeah, we had we had somebody on the show earlier, Cow Dairy, from Pawpaw, West Virginia. But I'm just not too familiar with other cheesemaking operations there, so I was just wondering if
you there may be a few cow dairy operations that I'm not too familiar with, and but as far as I understand it, we are the only a licensed cheese plant for goat products.
Well, now I have a question because I was looking at your website before the show and there was a really mouthwatering picture of some sort of a frying cheese. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about that.
Yes, we have it's like a mozzarella. It's a farmer's cheese. And here in West Virginia, you have to be very careful on how you label your cheeses because there's not too much understood about the real technical names of these things. So we have what we call a plain farmer's cheese. And that's like a mozzarella, similar to a mozzarella cheese. And we actually can put red pepper in it or jalapeno, or we also smoke it in a cold smoker at 38 degrees for about 5 minutes and with applewood chips. And we found that the applewood chips are very it's a very light smoke flavor. You don't feel like you're eating a campfire when you eat it.
It's a tough balance.
Now those cheeses are our firm cheeses. We don't age our cheeses. It's all fresh. And so they're all fresh made the week we sell them. And those are the cheeses that you can grill. Now you can put it on a hot Teflon coated pan on the stove, and I grill it about 30 seconds on a side. We cut them in small strips, and we sell in half-pound blocks, and you can take those and cut them up into strips and grill them. Or you can put them on a George Foreman grill, and it does the same thing. And it just is really something. You get the little grill marks on it, and you may have seen the picture of the browned surface on the cheeses.
It looks delicious.
And we have people that vehemently say, we hate goat cheese. We don't like that. I said, well, please try our grilled cheese. Come up here and give it a try. And they taste it fresh, and they say, oh, that's good. And then they taste it grilled, and it's so different. The flavor and the texture is so different. It changes quite a bit, especially with our red pepper cheeses. And it's just unbelievable. And the children, it's really something. We have families walk by our stand there at the market, and the children are jerking on their parents. Oh, please, I want some of that grilled cheese.
That's the way it's all about the kids. If the kids start eating it, that's good news for everybody. Because
that's
exactly
what my wife said. She says, when the children like it, I think that's our answer.
Yep, exactly.
And then we have their older farmer friends and folks in our town. It's a very small town, about 3,800 people, and they remember. They come up and say, "Well, I remember when my mother used to make goat cheese back in the 30s or in the 20s, and that this tastes just like it." And I said, well, thank you very much. And,
that is
and then when
awesome.
We
Biggest
churn
compliment.
Our ice cream with our 1929 John Deere hit-and-miss motor, we churn 5 gallons at a time. We do fresh strawberry, fresh peach, and vanilla. And our recent one from this last week, we started doing peanut butter, fresh peanut butter ice cream.
Oh, man, you're making me hungry.
I know. I just I told my wife, I said, I could really, really put the weight on if I eat all the profits here.
Well, somebody's got to do quality control, too. That's important.
That's exactly right. And so I tell her, just bring in just a few ounces for me to try.
Now, but, Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I want to make sure that people know where to find you on the internet so they can learn more about your farm. Do you guys have a website that people can go to?
Yes, it's www.tlcfarmgoatdairy.com.
TLCFarmGoatDairy.com. Excellent.
Right. And from there, they can also order. From there, they can go to our regular home site there, TLCFarmDairy@dishmail.net.
All right.
And that will direct you right to it.
Excellent. And so you'll ship direct.
Yes, we can, and we haven't done much of that. We've done a little bit Florida and Georgia to the relatives down there, but we haven't done too much because we sell everything at the farmer's market. And so we would love to encourage people on vacation to stop by Almost Heaven, Ripley, West Virginia. I tell you,
that sounds like a better plan anyways. I'd rather come to the farm than just get a box of cheese in the mail, that's for sure.
There you go, yeah. We'd love to talk to you about our product. And, you know, about the wonderful digestion and buffering, characteristics it has. And it's so excellent for just everybody, and especially for people on a chemotherapy from cancer and things like that. It digests so much better and quickly, much more quickly, and because the molecular structure is so much smaller than other dairy products, cow dairy products and others.
Well, thank you so much, Terry, for taking the time to be on the show with us. It's been a real, real pleasure chatting with you. And I certainly will stop by next time I'm driving down your neck of the woods.
Yeah, you just come down I-77, either direction, to the Ripley exit, and we'll be there every Saturday morning.
Fantastic. All right. Well, you have a wonderful rest of the week. And everybody else, we'll see you next Monday on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd. Hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd. Hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd. Hosted by Ann Saxelby. Broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. Removing barriers to better quality locally raised meats is one step further along the process. The Niche Meat Processor Assistance Network, or NMPAN, is connecting people across the country with information, tools, and each other. The organization is part of the Cooperative Extension Systems Extension, an internet-based collaborative learning service that consolidates the resources of the land-grant universities. The NMPAM affiliates are now available in almost 40 states and allow the co-coordinators to link people who need help with those who can offer it, such as extension staff members, state departments of agriculture, and markets with experience in small meat processing. They offer webinars, business plans, and hands-on help for processors or wannabe processors. More information is offered at their website, www.nichemeatprocessing.org. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Finger on the Pulp and City Winery are proud to present the Summer Barbecue Blowout Festival, August 6th, from noon to 4 p.m. The barbecue is happening at City Winery, located at 155 Varick Street in New York City. Restaurants featured at this event are Empire Mayonnaise, Van Dag, Momofuku Mofar, Imperial No. 9, Mile End, Mexico, Kraft, Dizzy's Club, Coca-Cola, The Meatball Shop, and Dos Toros. Providing the soundtrack for the day are Midnight Magic, Pewter Magic, New Villager, Punches, Ducky, DJ Autobot, and the Snacky Tune DJ. VIP and general admission tickets are available at citywinery.com. Finger on the Pulse of City Winery, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Heritage Foods USA, New York Magazine, Reka Vodka, Sonar, Smile, Guilt City, Sub-Zero, and Wolf. Please come out and join us for a day of fun, food, and dancing. For more information, go to www.fotpnyc.com.